More pills? Don't I take enough pills already? I thought if I paid attention to my diet and ate cheese and drank that orange juice with the extra calcium every day, my calcium would be okay. I'm even eating spinach. Why isn't this enough? So begins your conversation with your patient. That is a 64-year-old man with chronic kidney disease, secondary to long-standing type 2 diabetes mellitus. On routine blood work, his creatinine is 4.2 milligrams per deciliter, when in a normal range, it is 0.7 to 1.3 milligrams per deciliter, and serum calcium, 8.2 milligrams per deciliter, while in a normal range, it is 8.5 to 10.2 milligrams per deciliter. I'll follow your advice, but sometimes I just get discouraged taking all these pills, he says. What is the etiology of your patient's low calcium despite his increase in dietary calcium? And what therapy would you recommend? Welcome to Audio Bricks. This is Ed Barnes breaking down the renal calcium and phosphate regulation, NAS. But first, a quick shout out to the learning platform that makes Audio Bricks possible, the RX Bricks, which is the source of all content you hear on this podcast. And if you've been holding off on checking this out, well, now we're running a promotion where you can get a full Brick subscription for 50% off using the code capital RXPOD. That's RXPOD, you know, like the RX podcast. The link to the Bricks is in the show notes along with the promo code if you forgot it already. After completing this section, you will be able to 1. Describe how the body balances calcium and phosphate. 2. Describe the role of the kidney in the production of 1,25-dihydroxy vitamin D, or calcitriol. 3. Describe the sites of renal calcium and phosphate reabsorption. And 4. Describe the regulation of renal calcium and phosphate reabsorption. Part 1. How does the body balance calcium and phosphate? Calcium is most well known for its role in bone formation, and this is reflected in the fact that 99% of the total body calcium is stored in the bones. But calcium also plays a critical role in many other processes in the body, such as muscle contraction and blood clotting. Phosphate, while less popular than its counterpart, is also a vital ion that serves to mediate a variety of cellular activities, including muscle contraction, cell metabolism via adenosine triphosphate, ATP, and oxygen release from the red blood cells. The serum calcium level is maintained in the range of 8.5 to 10.2 milligrams per deciliter. Lower and higher levels can cause severe problems with cognition, muscle contraction, and cardiac conduction, among other issues. The serum phosphate is maintained in the range of 2.5 to 4.5 milligrams per deciliter. Low and high levels can lead to problems with muscle contraction and release of oxygen from red blood cells. Overall, calcium and phosphate balance is determined by a combination of gut absorption, bone reabsorption and formation, and renal tubular excretion. We will focus our attention on the role of the kidneys in this regulation. So, how is serum calcium controlled systemically? The circulating calcium level is regulated by parathyroid hormone, or PTH. Calcitriol, also known as 1,25-dihydroxy vitamin D, and calcitonin. Parathyroid hormone is released from the parathyroid glands when stimulated by hypocalcemia. It increases serum calcium levels by 1. Stimulating osteoclast activity in the bone to promote bone resorption and release of calcium and phosphate into the blood. 2. Increasing renal calcium reabsorption. And 3. Increasing renal conversion of 25-hydroxy vitamin D to 1,25-dihydroxy vitamin D, also known as calcitriol, thus activating the latter and stimulating gut calcium reabsorption. Calcitriol, which is the active form of vitamin D, acts on the small intestines to increase calcium and phosphate absorption. And calcitonin, the counter to PTH, is released by the parafollicular cells of the thyroid gland and opposes PTH and osteoclasts to inhibit bone resorption. It decreases the level of calcium in the blood. What is the systemic control of serum phosphate? Regulation of serum phosphate involves PTH and fibroblast growth factor 23, also known as FGF23, which have opposing effects on vitamin D production. Parathyroid hormone stimulates the release of phosphate from bone via osteoclast stimulation, but blocks its reabsorption in the kidney. Its overall effect on the serum phosphate level is small, except in severe hyperparathyroidism, when there may be mild hypophosphatemia. Fibroblast growth factor 23 is a growth factor produced by osteocytes in response to high serum phosphate levels. It acts in the kidneys to reduce tubular phosphate reabsorption, lowering the serum phosphate level. It also blocks secretion of PTH by the parathyroid gland and formation of calcitriol by the kidney. Many cases of hyperphosphatemia are due to reduced renal excretion of phosphate, seen in patients with severely decreased glomerular filtration or end-stage renal disease. These patients may need to bind phosphate in their gut to prevent its absorption, since they have trouble excreting phosphate in the urine. Let's pause for a quick quiz. Which two substances most increase the serum calcium concentration? PTH and calcitriol. Part 2. What is the kidney's role in vitamin T metabolism? Let's take a closer look at the kidney's production of calcitriol, which is a metabolically active form of vitamin D. Vitamin D comes from either the sunlight or diet. Examples like dairy, orange juice, some fish, fortified cereals, etc. In the liver, vitamin D is converted to calcifediol, 25-hydroxyvitamin D, or by the enzyme 25-hydroxylase. In the kidney, proximal tubules, calcifediol is then hydroxylated to calcitriol, or 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D. This enzymatic reaction is performed by 1-alpha-hydroxylase and is stimulated by PTH. Calcitriol, the active form of vitamin D, increases small bowel uptake of calcium and phosphate and promotes a small increase in renal calcium reabsorption. These effects raise the serum calcium concentration. Calcitriol also inhibits the release of PTH, thus preventing the body from becoming too hypercalcemic. Patients with severe chronic kidney disease develop fibrosis around the tubules, decreasing the 1-alpha hydroxylation reaction and decreasing calcitriol levels. This leads to hypocalcemia and metabolic bone disease unless supplemental calcitriol is taken. How about another quiz? Which enzyme is required for the hydroxylation of calcifediol and calcitriol? The answer would be 1-alpha-hydroxylase. Part 3. How does the kidney reabsorb calcium and phosphate? Now, let's focus on the handling of calcium and phosphate in the kidneys. Ionized calcium and phosphorus are both freely filtered at the glomerulus, then reabsorbed to varying degrees depending on the body's needs. About 10 grams of ionized free and complex calcium is filtered at the glomerulus each day, and 98 to 99% of the filtered load is reabsorbed by the kidneys. About 3.5 to 6 grams of phosphate is filtered daily, about 90% is reabsorbed in the tubules, and 10% is excreted. The typical daily dietary intake of phosphate is about 10% of the filtered load, so excretion is equal to the dietary intake. Let's take a deeper look into how much calcium and phosphate as percent of filtered load is reabsorbed in each nephron segment. Also, let's discuss each segment in turn and assign specific percentages of the fraction of filtered ion reabsorbed at particular segments of the nephron. First, the proximal tubule is responsible for reabsorbing the most phosphate and calcium, approximately 80 to 70% of what is filtered, respectively. The proximal tubule absorption of calcium is not hormonally regulated. In contrast, the proximal tubule absorption of phosphate is regulated by PTH. In the early parts of the proximal tubule, phosphate is reabsorbed through a sodium phosphate secondary active cotransporter embedded in the apical membrane. This reabsorption is driven by sodium moving down its concentration gradient from the tubular lumen into the cell. This sodium gradient is created by the basolateral sodium-potassium ATPase. This mechanism is the way most molecules are transported in the proximal tubule, like glucose and amino acids. By using the energy from the sodium moving down its concentration gradient, also known as secondary active transport, phosphate moves from the cytoplasm of the cell into the interstitium via facilitated diffusion through a basolateral organic anion transporter, then enters the bloodstream. Within the proximal tubule, the majority of calcium reabsorption occurs in the late parts of the structure. Here, calcium reabsorption occurs entirely via paracellular between the cells routes and is driven by a positive luminal potential. The positive luminal potential results from a balance of sodium, chloride, and bicarbonate in the segment and maintained by the complex system in which these ions are transported. Now on to the loop of Henle. Further down the nephron, calcium is reabsorbed in the thick ascending limb of the loop of Henle through paracellular transport, driven by a positive luminal potential, just as in the proximal tubule. One interesting difference is that here there is a calcium sensor that detects how much calcium comes through the paracellular pathway into the interstitium. When there is too much, as in high serum calcium levels, the sensor signals the cell to reabsorb less sodium, ultimately decreasing the paracellular transport of calcium. There is no phosphate reabsorption in the segment. Moving on to the distal convoluted tubule. Calcium reabsorption in the distal convoluted tubule is different from calcium reabsorption in prior segments. Transport occurs by transcellular, not paracellular transport, and is regulated by the hormones PTH and calcitriol. Calcium reabsorption in the early DCT relies on the basolateral calcium ATPase and basolateral sodium calcium antiporter to move calcium into the interstitium. The calcium enters the cell from the tubule via a channel that is expressed by stimulation for both PTH and calcitriol. Here's a quick quiz to see if you got that. How is calcium reabsorbed in the proximal tubule and distal convoluted tubule of the nephron? Calcium reabsorption is paracellular in the proximal tubule and transcellular at the distal convoluted tubule. Part 4. How is renal calcium and phosphate reabsorption regulated? Renal calcium and phosphate are regulated by hormonal, intrarenal, and systemic factors. There are several factors that regulate renal reabsorption of calcium. First, parathyroid hormone. PTH increases calcium reabsorption in the distal convoluted tubule, helping to increase the serum calcium level. Next, calcitriol. Calcitriol increases calcium absorption in the distal convoluted tubule. Next, intrarenal sensors. Serum calcium levels also affect renal calcium regulation. Hypercalcemia is sensed by the basolateral calcium sensor in the thick ascending limb of the loop of Henle, leading to reduced reabsorption in that structure. And finally, volume depletion. Volume contraction, or decreased ECF, is associated with retention of calcium, largely driven by increased sodium reabsorption in the proximal tubule. Induction of volume depletion appears to be the main mechanism for how thiazide diuretics used for hypertension and treatment of edema increase renal calcium reabsorption and cause hypercalcemia. Regulation of renal phosphate reabsorption is affected by several factors. First, there's PTH, also known as phosphate trashing hormone. This hormone decreases tubular phosphate absorption, leading to mild hypophosphatemia. PTH does this by downregulating the number of cotransporters in the apical membrane of both the proximal tubule and distal convoluted tubule. Next, fibroblast growth factor 23, FGF23, is produced by osteocytes in response to high serum phosphate levels. It acts in the kidney to reduce phosphate reabsorption in the proximal tubule and thus reduces the phosphate level in the serum. Also, diet. Decreased phosphate intake leads to reduced phosphate reabsorption in the proximal tubule by downregulation of the transport proteins. And finally, metabolic acidosis. Phosphate is a titratable acid. It is filtered at the glomerulus, then titrated to a proton secreted in the collecting duct. Through this mechanism, phosphate acts as a buffer to help with renal acid excretion. It then makes sense that in acidosis, when more acid excretion is needed, phosphate reabsorption drops in the proximal tubule, allowing more to move down the nephron to act as a buffer. Here's a quiz before we move on. What is the effect of PTH on calcium and phosphate reabsorption? PTH increases tubular calcium reabsorption and decreases tubular phosphate reabsorption. And that brings us to the end of our discussion on renal calcium and phosphate regulation. Now, let's recap to see if we've completed our goals. First, can you name the three parts of the body or organ systems that play a major role in regulating serum calcium and phosphate levels? The parathyroid gland, kidney, gastrointestinal tract, and bone play major roles in regulating the body's serum calcium and phosphate levels. Next, are you able to describe how serum calcium and serum phosphate levels affect PTH release? Elevated phosphate levels stimulate PTH release from the parathyroid gland, and elevated calcium levels inhibit its release. Next, can you describe the kidney's role in calcitriol or the active form of vitamin D's production? The vitamin D precursor from the diet and skin is hydroxylated in the liver to calcifediol by the enzyme 25-hydroxylase, and the kidneys are the site of 1-alpha-hydroxylase production. The enzyme that is required to convert calcifediol, calcitriol, to the active form of vitamin D. Next, are you able to describe where in the nephron the majority of the calcium and phosphate are reabsorbed? Approximately 98 to 99% of the calcium that is filtered by the kidneys is reabsorbed, and the majority of that occurs in the proximal tubule. 80 to 90% of phosphate is reabsorbed in the nephron, and majority occurs in the proximal tubule. Finally, can you name the two molecules involved in the regulation of renal calcium and phosphate reabsorption in the distal convoluted tubule and how they affect them? PTH and calcitriol, when present in the distal convoluted tubule, both stimulate the reabsorption of calcium into the serum and the secretion of phosphate into the lumen of the nephron. And that's it. Armed with your newfound knowledge on renal calcium and phosphate regulation, let's get back to the patient from the beginning of this episode. Thinking back to your patient. A 64-year-old man with chronic kidney disease secondary to long-standing type 2 diabetes mellitus, who has followed all orders on increasing his calcium intake, only to still have a low calcium level. What is the etiology of his low calcium? What therapy would you recommend? You now know that the circulating level of calcium is regulated by parathyroid hormone, or PTH, calcitriol, 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D, and calcitonin. In patients with chronic kidney disease, the production of calcitriol is impaired by fibrosis around the proximal tubules. This leads to a decrease in the activity of 1-alpha-hydroxylase, the enzyme responsible for converting 25-hydroxyvitamin D, calcifediol, to 1,25-dihydroxyvitamin D in the kidney. Reduced calcitriol levels decrease the small bowel uptake of calcium and serum calcium levels fall. Among other recommendations, you advise your patient to begin taking calcitriol. "Okay, I'll do it," says the patient reluctantly. "My wife takes calcitriol too, so we'll just do it together. Thanks for being attentive to all these details, but I sure don't like taking all these pills." And that's our show. Make sure to like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts if you like what you've heard. Remember, your feedback helps us improve. And again, now's your chance to get 50% off the RX Bricks by following the link in the show notes below and typing in the promo code capital RXPOD, like RX Podcast. It's a huge discount on the written material that serves as the foundation of Audio Bricks, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. So go check that out if you haven't already, and help keep Audio Bricks free. Until next time, friends.